If you like YouTube, you'll love YouTube Premium. Hi, I'm Sean Evans from Hot Ones, and I want to tell you about YouTube Premium. It has offline downloads, so you can watch without Wi-Fi. Background play, so you can lock your phone, and it still plays, baby. Oh, and it is completely ad-free. Yes, I said it, ad-free. Try YouTube Premium for 2 months free at youtube.com/premium. Trial eligibility varies. Terms apply. Cancel anytime.
The crazy thing is, did you hear about the salmon on antidepressants?
Come on.
This sounds like a joke.
Right?
So it's really great for all of these organisms, but it's also home to flesh-eating bacteria.
Yeah. And flesh-eating bacteria, Tori.
Who are the Misfits? Carrie Byron. Tori Belleci. Together more than 20 years having fun together.
Hey there, Mythfits. We're back again.
Welcome to another Monday. How are you guys doing? Is everybody excited that their kids are going back to school? Summer vacation's over, and then now they're like, let's send them back to school. Send them back to the babysitters. Oh, when does it get easier, Carrie? Tell me it gets easier.
It does get easier. I mean, you're going to raise her right. She's going to be fun. She's going to be your best friend. I love hanging out with my kid. But, you know, this is her senior year. It's my last year with her at home. Wow. So I'll be crying all year long. Yeah, it's funny when you get to that point where you're just like, so much of your joy comes from seeing them happy and seeing them go on these adventures and seeing how cool they turned out. And like, I'm Stella's biggest fan for sure.
And then they move away.
They leave you forever.
And then they move away. I was up in Marin this weekend. We had an ILM model shop reunion party.
Whoa, those guys are so cool. Oh my God, tell me everything. God.
It's just crazy how, like, they were there from the inception of Star Wars, like the original Star Wars. And Lauren Peterson, he's like one of the OG model makers. And he was telling me that Adam Savage is doing a ILM documentary or a model making documentary, which sounds really interesting. But he was, you know, we started telling old George Lucas stories. And there was one time where I was working on the Federation battleship from Phantom Menace. So episode one. And when you start working at ILM, everybody tells you, do not talk to George Lucas, whatever you do. You know, it's like, leave him alone. Because the fact that everybody got into the effects world is probably because they fell in love with Star Wars, right? So he's like the king of the geeks. And so I remember this one time I was out on set and Jeff Olson, who was the producer of Star Wars, the effects aspect of it, who just passed away, sadly, was such a great guy. So he came out with George Lucas and Doug Chang, who you are friends with. You know Doug Chang as well, who is the art director for Star Wars. So they come out with George Lucas and George comes up and he goes, so do the lights in the back, the engines, do those light up? And I like looked at the cameraman and I looked at the producer.
And you're like, what talk to him?
Exactly. And the producer looks at me. He's like, you can answer the question. And I go, okay, sorry, dude. I was hammered. They hammered it into me that I'm not allowed to talk to you. And he just went.
Speak only when spoken to, Tori Belleci.
Yeah. I was like, am I allowed to talk? I was told I'm not supposed to talk to George Lucas. He asked you a question. I know. I'm scared. I don't want to get fired.
Anyway. Oh, my God. That is the ultimate name dropping. Industrial Light and Magic. I can't believe you worked there. What a time in history. Those guys are also legends. So cool.
Such legends. Yeah. And it feels like a lifetime ago, especially since Mythbusters feels like a lifetime ago.
End of an era. I know every time I mention how old my kid is, people are like, really? That's how long ago Mythbusters was? I'm like, yeah. It's surprising because we still look so good.
Filters, baby, filters. Put on those filters. But I was driving back down and there was all this traffic because there was Outside Lands going on in Golden Gate Park. Did you go to Outside Lands?
Honestly, I had a ticket. I was going to go with my friend and then she couldn't make it. And I was just, I didn't want to go solo to a festival concert because that's crazy. And my daughter and all her friends are doing their own thing. So I ended up just selling my ticket to a teenager that didn't have one. But it's also summer in San Francisco, which means it is freezing. It's like so wet that I was driving onto the, like off of the freeway and I couldn't see the road. I was following the lines on the side through the fog because it was so thick. And I'm like, maybe I'm not that bummed to watch this on my TV at home with a glass of wine, cozy under a blanket. It is midsummer right now, and I realized, like, the very end of July is always Shark Week. Do you remember when Discovery was kind of a bigger deal, and, like, they used to pour so much promotional money into Shark Week, and, like,
yeah, totally.
I mean, even your Jackass friends had a show at one point, and I think when they were trying to, like, revive it, they had some YouTubers, but it was always full of all of these, like, salacious headlines to get people, like, for us. During our era, it was Megalodon, the prehistoric shark. And then they show that documentary style film about Megalodon, and they made it kind of look like that shark was still roaming the oceans because they had like a teeny tiny little disclaimer in the beginning. And so people like thought there was actually this giant, huge shark.
I remember when it aired, they were like, it got 4 million views. The first screening, it was 4 million views. It was like, because you told them that they were going to see an actual megalodon. Like, you made it look like it was a documentary, not a mockumentary.
Because you're the Discovery Channel. You're the one that's supposed to be educational, that everybody looks to be smart. And you guys were like, well, we're going to Blair Witch it just a little bit. Just a little bit.
So messed up. There was a lot of backlash after that one because you're telling everybody this is a documentary and we discovered a megalodon. Of course, people are going to tune in.
The funny thing is, I think like more people get injured by vending machines, killed by vending machines in a year. We don't have vending machine week.
Well, killed by vending machine or killed by greed, right? Isn't it? Because they're shaking the machine. It's not like you're walking down the hall and the machine just falls on you.
True.
It's human stupidity that's causing that.
Well, the one thing I've noticed is they always have to have some sort of like salacious kind of headline. And of recent years, it's always been cocaine shark. And like often the spokesperson for cocaine shark is our guest today, which is Tracy Fanara. She's an environmental engineer and research scientist and former, I guess you'd call her a mythbuster because she was on the search, a potential future Mythbuster, but she ended up going to work for NOAA, which is the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. She was actually a for real scientist. She was way more qualified than we were to be on that show. but, you know, I love always seeing her talk about cocaine shark because they get that big headline, which is really catchy, but it's kind of dull.
What is the cocaine shark? Is it like a drug deal gone bad in the ocean?
No, I mean, it kind of highlights the impact of like water and wastewater treatment and how much we remove from wastewater. But the water is polluted enough that there's amounts of cocaine in so many of our animals. In fact, they've found traces of cocaine in every shrimp that was tested in England's waterways.
A little shrimp hitting those rails.
They found traces of cocaine in every sample, along with ketamine, pharmaceuticals, and like banned pesticides. Basically, all the shrimp were contaminated.
Why is this happening? Is it because the drugs are getting dumped into the ocean? I mean, like,
well, luckily we have Tracy Fanara on to answer that question for you. Because
I guess they have been blowing up a lot of those drug boats.
I don't know. Let's ask her about it. During Mythbusters, there was this moment where I finally paid off my student loans, and it was such a money milestone for me. Like, I had finally saved enough and trying to figure out where my money was going and learning how to budget. That's when, you know, you actually start being an adult, is like figuring out where your money is going.
And that's why we are so excited to have Monarch as a sponsor of MythFits.
What people love about Monarch is that it helps them figure out where their money's going and if a large percentage of their money is going somewhere that they just didn't expect.
Plus, it can ease the mental load of tracking your finances.
And you can use the investment view to compare your portfolio to the S&P 500. God, I wish I had an app like this when I was trying to budget during the college days.
Balancing your checkbook?
Ugh. The
old-fashioned days. Monarch's AI assistant can help you get really specific with what information you need from your finances. You can ask things like, can I afford these concert tickets based on my spending? Or how much did I spend on delivery apps last month?
Monarch's bill split feature makes splitting the checks simple and stress-free. I hate that part of the dinner. With this, you can just scan the receipt, have everyone claim what they ordered, and then settle up all in one place. No separate app needed.
Write your own money story with Monarch.
Use code MythFits at Monarch.com and get your first year of Monarch Core. Half off, just $50.
That's 50% off your first year at monarch.com with code MythFits.
Hey, MythFits, we've got Tracy Fanara here, environmental engineer, research scientist, formerly NOAA, which is the National Oceanic Atmospheric Administration, but also a former prospective MythBuster from The Search.
Yeah, I mean... We tried to do something that wasn't as good as what you guys did the first time. I mean, it's a story that keeps on repeating itself.
You were way more qualified. You were an actual scientist.
Yeah, but I wasn't a builder. I was the worst builder on that show. But I was learning to weld and plasma cut on live TV. I almost like, you know, Sawzaws are dangerous. Let's just.
Well, you want to know a little secret? So were we.
So were we. Yeah.
I swear, we literally, I remember right before getting hired to go on MythBusters, I like went into a shop who a friend of mine was a welder. And I'm like, please give me a crash course in welding. I have no idea what to do. And he was like, all right, let's show you. Here are the basics. So yeah, you're not alone in that aspect.
Scotty was teaching me when the cameras were off. Like, she was trying to give me lessons so that I didn't look like a total dumbass. She was a really good teacher.
That's awesome. Yeah, I would stay after work at USGS. I was doing subcontracting. I was looking at, like, lead contamination in birds at military sites and insecticides impact on monarch butterflies. And then I would, like, go in the back and be like, can you show me how to do this? And that's how, yeah.
So how did you audition for The Search?
So I was already talking to Discovery Channel after I put out a video, my first video ever, on my PhD research. And I put it out there and someone from Discovery Channel called me and they were trying to build a show with me. And then this opportunity came along. So they put my name in for it. And the next day, oh my God, it's so crazy because I was actually rushed to the hospital. I had a cyst burst. Like, it, I know.
Oh, Jesus.
What?
TMI, but I was in so much pain for this interview. Ooh. I get back and there's, you know, I'm on the interview with the producer and I'm in so much pain. I'm like, oh my God, is this going to end? Is this going to end? And he's like, can you draw a picture of a horse? And what? I'm like, what?
That's that random. Is the weirdest, most random question. What?
Draw a picture of a horse. And I'm like, is this a trick question? Is he... wondering if I'm going to think of like a horse in gymnastics or is there some building horse that I don't even know about? Or do I just draw a regular horse?
What was the point of that?
I think that they wanted us to be artistic and be able to draw plans and stuff like that.
Okay.
You know, but here's where the drama starts, right? They did this really stupid thing where they ended the show and for the next 3 months, there was crickets, and they weren't going to announce who won until the live finale, and it started to get a little weird within, and apparently one of the people told Alan that I said he should have been cut instead of me, which I never said, and then Alan, like, hated me, except he was, like, my friend, and then everybody else was, like, worried they were going to pull me back in for the finale and, like, cause this huge, like, upset. And so everybody was super mean to me.
And oh, well,
so you were the bad girl. You were the bad girl of The Search.
Yes. And then one of my friends was a producer at Science Channel who I dated for a brief time afterwards, very brief time afterwards. He was like, he wasn't sticking up for me. He's like telling me what everybody's saying, but not correcting them. Like it was miserable. It was time after it, you know, like during the airing. But game day, that was fun. That was fun. Like if there was a show that would be just like that, where there's, you know, there's no competition.
Yeah.
you know, like you don't get voted off the island, but there's a design competition. That would be awesome. That was so much fun.
Well, that was the part that we liked the best about Mythbusters is we were working together. Like, to take that part away, if we were always competing against each other, that would have sucked. Those were my least favorite times when they're like, okay, the three of you are going to go off with three different designs and whoever the best one is wins. And then it would get a little cutthroaty. I was like, ugh, I didn't like those days. I liked it when they're like, oh, here's a project you all get to work on together. Yeah.
I mean, even if it was competitive like that and no one got voted off the island, that's fine. I'm fine with
losing. Yeah, right. Totally. Like, if I lose, I still keep my job. Cool.
Well, here's the crazy thing is that they wanted, they knew who they wanted to cut, right, each time. So they would make sure that their team lost or there had to be some reason to cut them, right?
Mm-hmm.
So for mine, it was needle in a haystack. Okay. And I'm like in this pool, like the whole episode, we had this like whole conveyor belt with magnets to try to get the needles out of the haystack. And I'm in this big pool of water trying to see because the bone needles would float.
Yeah.
So I was like trying to get the bone needles out of there. It was miserable. I was cold all day, but I'm like, hey, someone told me I'm winning this thing. It's worth it, right?
God, that's so messed up.
What if they told everybody that? Maybe they told every single one of you that.
They might have. We don't know. We don't know. But they apparently they put more needles in the other teams or something like that. Try to make it. Yeah, it was like they rigged that one.
Reality television is fake.
Yeah. Yeah.
What?
But the rest of them, like besides that kind of thing, it was all real. You know what I mean? We really did build everything ourselves. Like we didn't have anybody come in and help us build. Like it really was, you know, but
the needles were stacked up against you.
Oh. Well done, Carrie.
Oh, no. Okay, so before you came on, Carrie was going on about cocaine sharks. Can you enlighten us about what is going on in the ocean with cocaine sharks?
Yes, yeah, sharks are on cocaine and all of our other drugs that we consume because it comes out in our wastewater and it goes into the coastal water. So any kind of shark or animal, fish, that lives in those coastal areas, yeah, they're on our drugs in very small amounts, but it's there.
So it's coming out in our wastewater. So this is like what gets flushed, what gets like how is it getting into the wastewater?
Yeah, so a couple different ways. And you know, when I did the show Cocaine Sharks, no research was done on this, but I knew from my experience with engineering, you know, wastewater engineering, that this was a very plausible thing. But what we did with Discovery Channel for Shark Week was look for, we were looking at boats that would dump their cocaine bales when the cops would come around.
I was thinking. That's what I was saying. Cause I was like, how could there be that much cocaine in the ocean unless it's like a drug boat that is either getting blown up or trying not to get caught? That makes way more sense.
And if they're throwing the bodies off with it, Tori, we know that it's going to be attracted to the blood if it swims through it. So they're probably like,
what bodies? What are you talking about?
Well, because cartels and drugs, if you're...
Oh, come on. Bodies. Why we got to get all dark, Carrie?
Hell, I watched so many movies. That feels like what always happens in the movies. That's where you dump the bodies.
No, cartel, they dissolve the bodies in vats of acid. Oh. Everybody knows that.
Okay.
Breaking Bad. You know, okay. We don't know.
So that's where all the cocaine, so there's enough cocaine in the water that it's detected in animals.
Okay, so here's the thing. That was our first hypothesis, that it was from these bales. And, you know, the bales splashing into the ocean would attract a shark, and tiger sharks will eat anything. So that's what we thought, right? But that would affect open ocean sharks, mm-hmm. You know, and if a shark did eat a bale of cocaine or bite down on a bale of cocaine, it would be a one-off, really. You know, it would be like Cocaine Bear. True story. Yeah. Except the bear probably just died. But after we did that show, it inspired some researchers in Brazil to actually do a study. Wow. And they did their study near coastal waters, near basically a shop or a factory where they would make cocaine. And then some of that wastewater was going. Yep.
That's crazy.
I know.
Just a factory that makes cocaine. So, like, was it in Colombia or something? Like, obviously in a country where they're manufacturing it.
Yes. Yeah. It was Brazil, I think.
Okay.
And then from there, studies started popping up everywhere. You know, the Bahamas, other areas with coastal waterways. I mean, and we started seeing not only was there cocaine in the water in areas that did not have these little, you know, manufacturing facilities. This is tracing it back. It did come from our wastewater. It's crazy. Like, and it's not just cocaine. It's cocaine gets the headlines, but
right.
What's yeah. more concerning is the pharmaceuticals, the antidepressants, birth control, like anything like that. And in this past study in the Bahamas, they found differences in the biology of,
wow.
of animals. Yeah. And it mostly affects those animals that either juveniles that are really close to the shore because that's where they live their first part of their life, or coastal or shallow water sharks are most likely to be impacted. Not white sharks or any of those deeper sharks, unless juvenile, of course. Yeah, it's crazy.
So what's the greater impact on the ecosystem that all of this is leaching into all of the wildlife?
Well, that's the big question, right? At these amounts that we're seeing, these animals, yes, they are having physiological changes. Their metabolism changes.
They're all paranoid. They're all staying up all night.
Well, the crazy thing is, did you hear about the salmon on antidepressants?
Go on.
This sounds like a joke.
Right?
I mean, sharks on cocaine got headlines, but these studies have been done for decades. They did a study with salmon, and it made them more brave. They were able to get over different hydraulic obstacles faster, things like that, which sounds like a good thing, right?
Yeah.
But the problem is that they were leaving their pack. They were leaving their school.
Okay.
And so they're actually creating a situation where they were more subject to being eaten.
Because they were the first one to get up the river, and the bears are like, it must be time. Oh, that's crazy.
That is wild.
Super interesting. And then eels, it would like, so some of these drugs would like slow them down, like the antidepressants, they would slow them down so that they missed their migration window. And some animals are missing reproductive windows. It's just messing with them at a very subtle amount. But how does that compound? And when are we impacted? I mean, if you think about it, it's all one water. We're not making any new water. So the water that we today did 1,000 years ago will 1,000 years from now. So if we're not checking for all these chemicals in our drinking water, which we don't because it's expensive, and we're not implementing technologies to get rid of all of these drugs, the question is, when will it start accumulating in our bodies?
Well, I mean, the ripple effect, no pun intended. We were just looking at an article about shrimp in English waterways, and one of them was tested and has all of these different drugs and chemicals in them. And, you know, there's certain animals that are just kind of the garbage men of the sea. Shrimp, I'm having a harder time eating lately because I just know they're absorbing all of the nastiness of the bottom. And every time I eat them, I'm like, ugh. I'm kind of getting off the bottom feeders, like just knowing that there are these filters for all of the garbage that's down there and the waters are getting more polluted. And I love anything that's a vehicle for butter. So it's a really hard transition for my brain to actually make. But I can't imagine the effects of it's full circle, like the antidepressants are going into the salmon and then we're eating the salmon. And what is the impact on our health?
No, you're exactly right. Same thing with oysters, right? And clams. Like we use them to clean water. And yet we eat them.
God, you're right. Oh. You're ruining oysters for me too.
So that's why I get all hyper after I have oysters. Or is that another?
Cocaine oysters, Tori. You're eating the cocaine oysters.
So the salmon on antidepressants, it's just because people are flushing their drugs down the toilet?
Or just peeing them out. And
okay.
So here's the thing. There is a solution here. It's what's expensive. You know, right now, a lot
stop
of our-
stop doing drugs. That's the so, that's the answer. Oh,
yeah, maybe that should be where I was going to go with it.
Oh, you had a different. Okay, let's hear. Let's hear your solution.
Wastewater treatment. Yeah, we only treat the water to a certain amount. Then it goes to the natural water bodies, into the environment, eventually comes back. And when we pull it for drinking water, we have more more refined ways of treating water at that point. If we put like a tertiary treatment or like an extra treatment pathway at the end of what we have right now to enhance the quality of the water that's going into the environment, we can alleviate a lot of those problems, but it's just expensive. So some places are doing water and wastewater treatment together. In Texas, they're doing it. You know, it's just a public perception, really. I mean, because we are drinking the same water that we're flushing down the toilet. It's just the truth. But people don't like to drink the water from the place that their wastewater goes, which is crazy to me, but I guess the general public doesn't like. But we got to get more used to it, because the sooner we get to that place, the better our water quality is going to be for the natural environment.
Tracy, with all of your research and everything you do, what is one thing that you wish people believed wholeheartedly that you would like to impart to them?
Probably that everything is connected, so everyone makes an impact, and that making a difference in the world is a responsibility that you can't avoid. Like, everything that you do has a, you know, equal and opposite reaction. But it is a domino effect. So you have the opportunity to make the world a better place every single day with every single action.
Tori, do you plan to give your kid an allowance? Like, how are you teaching her about money?
What my parents did with me is, if I did certain chores, cleaned the garage, did the yard, if I did those, then I would get an allowance.
I feel like they need to teach financial literacy in school, because it's like, we as parents, it's on us.
Well, thankfully, we have partnered with Cash App.
For all the parents out there with teenagers, we know you're already trying to keep a million different things under control. Cash App is here to make sure your teen's money and their spending isn't adding to that craziness.
Cash App gives teens ages 13 to 17 an easy way to manage and learn about money. With sponsorship from an eligible parent or guardian, teens can get their own personalized Cash App card. Choose from different colors and designs that match their style and quickly access money sent by family and friends.
The platform also has tools that can help teens develop real-world financial habits in the space that's safe, easy to navigate, and all with your oversight and approval.
With the Cash App card, you and your teen's balances receive 24/7 fraud monitoring. And if the card ever gets lost, you have the ability to lock their card right from your phone in just one tap.
Download Cash App today and sponsor your teen. Visit the link in our episode description.
Cash App is a financial service platform, not a bank. Banking services provided by Cash App's bank partners. Cash App Visa Debit Flex Card issued by Sutton Bank, member FDIC, and the Bancorp Bank N.A. pursuant to a license from Visa USA, Inc.
See terms and conditions for Sutton Bank prepaid cards, Sutton Debit Flex Cards, and Bancorp Debit Flex Card. Savings provided by Cash App, a Block, Inc. brand. Visit cash.app/legal/podcast for full disclosures. You're always so full of such interesting information. I don't know if you guys, Mythfits out there, if you're not following Tracy Fanara, you can find her at Inspector Planet. That is her nickname. But I was watching the other day when you were talking about something that I you live on the Florida coast, and you have different things wash up on shore. Sargam? Is that what it's called? That
sargam.
Weird... Say sargam. That weird sort of like seaweedy looking stuff that you're holding on to. Can you please tell Tori about that? Because I was getting super creeped out by the fact you can't touch it.
Yeah, okay. So we have this huge blob that basically is crushing tourism right now. So it's macroalgae. It's like seaweed. And historically, it's been really important for the ecosystem. It used to, you know, start off of Western Africa and in the Atlantic, come down through something called the Sargasso Sea, and some of it would get picked up into currents and land in Mexico, the Yucatan, Florida, the Caribbean islands. But in 2009 and 10, there was a wind anomaly that kind of shifted where sargassum went. And it basically, the water currents pushed this seaweed further south to where warmer waters, lots of nutrients. And then on top of that, deforestation, climate change, all these other factors come into play. But now, I mean, these blobs are massive. I mean, they're coming into beaches like, 9-foot high walls you can see in on some of these beaches. They can't get rid of it fast enough. And then when it starts to die and decompose, it releases gases that can cause eye irritation. And
it just smells so horrible.
Yes.
Yes. We have that because I'm in Monterey Bay. I live in the Monterey Bay. The one we had recently were all these micro jellyfish, you know, these small jellyfish came up onto the, you know, onto the beach and they started dying. And every time the wind would, come inland, it was just like, it smelled like a canning factory. Like it stunk so bad.
Imagine walls.
Well, I've seen pictures of this. Also from your channel, it's insane how much is building up. And that's got to be choking out the beaches. And nobody wants to go to that beach.
No. I mean, I went down to Miami from the parking lot. Like, and then the beach is completely dead. And the crazy thing, what you said about me touching it or not touching it, rather. So it's really great for all of these organisms that love to, you know, basically grow in this habitat. It's a floating ecosystem for juvenile eels, economically important fish species, really important, but it's also home to flesh-eating bacteria.
Yeah. Flesh-eating bacteria, Tori. Flesh-eating bacteria.
Zombie bacteria.
Yeah.
That sounds like a horror movie. So this is just natural. We didn't do this, or did we?
Something could be natural, but we can exacerbate it. Now, there's arguments to be made over how much human intervention had to do with this, because there was a weather anomaly that kind of like assisted in its new territory. And now it's called the Great Sargassum Belt. But
I'm sorry, every time you say that, some reason my 12-year-old brain thinks it's something dirty.
See, it's funny because I go with sarcasm. Of course you would.
I see. I heard sarcasm. It was like, oh, that's, are you being sarcastic?
Tori, we're looking for two different things in life.
And Carrie's like, orgasmic?
It's the combination of the two. Really combo.
It's like, sorry. It's like working with Beavis and Butthead.
We are Beavis and Butthead.
Would be perfect. I mean, that's what makes you guys so fun.
So go on with the flesh-eating bacteria. So are people going down to the beach and like messing with this stuff? Because if it's choking out the beach, I feel like I would go touch it. Are there warnings?
People are kind of swimming through it or were when it wasn't so. And that's the thing. Like I saw all these videos online of these people that live down there. Oh, sargassum isn't that bad. Look, I'm just floating in it. It just helps me float better. And I'm like, oh my gosh.
Oh, gross.
Nope.
This is a horror movie for me.
We've got cocaine shark and we've got flesh-eating virus in the sargassum. What is another thing that is completely terrifying that you've learned about the fragile waterways, Tracy?
Oh, gosh. There's so many things. Well, down here we have Florida red tide, which is a toxic algae that releases a toxin that aerosolizes. So in 2018, when we had this massive bloom in the there's a state of emergency in Florida. Toxic aerosols traveled more than 30 miles inland. So people were getting sick, like not even close to the water. So that one was pretty bad. Over where you guys are, you guys had a Pseudonychia bloom. So
can't even say that.
Excuse me?
What?
Consuntite. So, say it again.
Pseudonychia.
Okay. What is that?
Pseudonychia.
So it's a microalgae as well as actually a diatom. So the camp that I was running the past 3 weeks for, Arizona or Oxnard, I wasn't running it. I designed it, Oxnard School District. So I had these kids figure out why the sea lions got sick. Do you guys remember that from last year in 2020?
Yeah.
The sea lions got sick.
There were sea lions and then a bunch of whales were great. Like it was like. Almost like a weekly occurrence where a gray whale or I forget, I think it was gray whales were just washing up onto the shore dead.
Yep.
And it was like, what's going on here?
So that's what I gave the kids to figure out. But because it's an Earth systems phenomenon, right? You guys had, remember the super bloom in like 24, and then you guys had a huge drought and it was switched over from neutral or El Nino to La Nina in December. So you guys had no rain in December when normally that's the rainy season. And it was super dry going into January. And then you had the wildfires with all that wind. And the wildfires just like spread like crazy. And whenever you have wildfires hit ground, it changes the landscape. So you get this, what's called hydrophobic, so water-fearing layer right underneath the soil. So when you get rain, which is what happened next, you guys got atmospheric rivers, a ton of rainfall that just poured all of that nutrients, all of that ash, everything that was on the surface into the ocean, putting a lot of nutrients in there.
And that's bad? That's bad.
Well, that can feed an existing algae bloom. And the reason why you guys had an existing algae bloom, you had a major upwelling event from these wind events that brought a ton of nutrients to the surface that fed this harmful species. And the crazy thing is the fish will still swim around, even if they have the toxin in them, which is why it really bioaccumulated a lot. Sea lions are smart enough not to eat dead fish, but...
How did you get into this field? Because, I mean, you are a wealth of knowledge when it comes to everything water, and you're the one that I call. I mean, I watch you storm chasing, and you're out there doing research, and you're running camps for kids and teaching them about waterways. Like, how did you originally get into this field?
Yeah, you know, so when I was little, I wanted to be an inventor. I like started winning invention conventions, and whenever you're good at something, like, you know, and I had these big, thick glasses, so everybody just assumed I was smart. So it can go back farther. I'm going to start in the middle and then maybe we'll go back. So this teacher told me about this hazardous waste dump site near where I lived. And in industry, a chemical industry was dumping toxins into this canalway for decades and then put a piece of sod on it and sold it to a school district for a dollar.
Ew.
And people started moving in, building houses, you know, schools, and there were birth defects and cancer clusters and babies being born with double sets of teeth.
Whoa.
And yeah. And this woman, Lois Gibbs, was like, there's something wrong here. We need to fix this. And they were like, no, you're a hypochondriac. You're crazy. And then the county got like a chemical company to go in and test the houses. Well, the chemical company that they hired was the chemical company that put all the chemicals in the canal. And it was just really...
That seems like a...
We've seen this movie.
Yeah. You're giving us so much fuel for like a crazy horror movie.
I mean, well, yes. this is very Aaron Brockovich. So were you like just a young activist?
It is very Aaron Brockovich. Yeah. So the crazy thing is that she was losing this battle, right? And then the blizzard of 77 came through and brought a lot of snow. And that snow started to melt and it mobilized the sludge to the point where it was coming into people's basements and coming up through the asphalt. Like it was, yeah, you could not ignore it anymore. So Lois Gibbs perfectly positioned herself. She never gave up. And she called in the federal government, and that's the EPA came in, and that's where the EPA Superfund program started because of Love Canal. And fun fact, the reason why that canal was empty and a chemical company moved in and started pouring stuff into it was because no one believed that Nikola Tesla would beat out Thomas Edison on the bid to power Buffalo from Niagara Falls. So that canalway was built to accommodate for the limitations of DC power.
Oh, wow.
I know.
Look, that is a cool history.
Did you know you can shut off the Niagara Falls? Side note. Because I was up there years ago, and we on Mythbusters, we were like, let's do barrel over the Niagara Falls. Like, can you survive in a barrel going over the falls? And my plan was like each of us, Jamie, Adam, Cary Grant, and myself, we would each build our own kind of unique barrel that we thought would withstand going over the falls. They never let us do it, obviously. When I was up there, I was talking to the guards and they're like, oh yeah, we get every once in a while, we'll get somebody who will try to go over the falls in either a canoe or, you know, a kayak, or they'll throw a barrel, some kind of device, whatever. And he goes, but now we're able to shut the river off and basically the water will like just get so low that it just is so dangerous. Like you're going to hit rock. And so that is what they do to deter people from trying to go over the waterfall in a barrel.
Oh my God.
Is that crazy? Behavior.
Yes. I'm glad we never did that one. That sounds terrible.
I was going to let you guys go first.
Obviously.
I'm a gentleman like that.
You guys weren't actually going to do that. You were going to put like Buster in there, right?
Well, it was definitely on the books, but it never got past the, I want to do this. I really want to do this.
It was on the long list. The long, long list of things that we never got to. Thank goodness.
What is like one of the biggest environmental myths that drives you crazy?
That's a hard one. An environmental myth. Cloud seeding drives me crazy. Like when people think we manipulate the weather. When people say you're manipulating the weather, that does drive me crazy.
Wait, cloud seeding is not a real thing?
Oh, no, that's a real thing.
Oh, okay.
In my opinion, it's not weather manipulation. All you're doing is putting some heavy metals into a cloud that's already there and what rain. And it's low level clouds and it only works like 0 to 18% more precipitation. I mean, it's ineffective. You have to have a cloud there. People think that we're just like creating clouds. You don't just create clouds. We're just not doing that. Like, so when people were like, oh, you know, like the hurricanes are hitting Florida because it's a political election year, like stuff like that. It's just.
Well, you can see how people would not trust the government considering some of the things that they've done. We know for a fact that long time ago, they put a norovirus into the fog in San Francisco to see if they could create biological warfare using the fog. And one person died from complications of it. But it succeeded only in like a couple people. But they did do that experiment. It was part of a book called Behold the Pale Horse, where he threw all these conspiracy theories in, but one or two of them would be actually true. And when these files got declassified, you know, most of them weren't true, but that one actually happened. So distrusting the government is what's going to feed the conspiracies of we control the weather because we do some crazy, crazy stuff.
We do. But we also can't even get precipitation right. I mean, is it going to rain today? We don't know. Like,
that's a good point. A weather person could be wrong 90% of the time and still keep their job.
Right. Because their way of making predictions based on, you know, making forecasts based on predictions and they're not always. The point is to be able to control weather on that kind of scale is. That's especially funny. A hurricane.
Myth busted, Tracy. Ever. Say it. You wanted to be a myth buster. Say it.
I did want to be a myth buster. Let me be a myth buster. get that. Oh, and the whole like climate change is a hoax thing really gets me. And the reason for it, and when people are like, I don't think that we can control. I don't think we have that much control. I'm like, you don't think we have that much control, but you're like, it's the same people that are upset about, you know, water quality with algae blooms. I'm like, okay, so we can control that, but we can't, whatever goes up must come down or it stays up. When it comes to us affecting our atmospheric chemistry, it's very much like, I don't get how you can be disconnected from that, you know, because it's just, to me, it's kind of common sense. But
well, you as an advocate and an environmentalist and somebody who's spent their life studying this kind of thing, what are the things that we can do as a society or me personally that's going to help with, you know, our fragile water ecosystem?
Stop doing cocaine, Carrie. And drugs.
Full circle, Tori.
Stop doing all those drugs, Carrie. That's what you can do.
Stop flushing things down the toilet. I think that the first thing that you can do is find out where your water comes from and where it goes. Where does it go when you flush your toilet? Where does it come from when it comes out of your faucet? Because we don't even realize what a miracle that is. I mean, unsafe drinking water is the world's leading killer among children, and we're able to just turn on a faucet. But figuring out where that water comes from so that you have more of a connection to the environment, I think that that's been our biggest problem, is that we've become so disconnected from the world around us and from everything that supports our survival, because we've made it easy. You know, like environmental engineers have made it super easy to ignore everything. We just put our trash at the end of the road and it goes away.
Right.
Flush our toilet and it goes away. You know, like, no one really thinks about whether, like, our little gnomes or elves, like, taking care of, like, people don't think about that. And I think that just that awareness of that full circle of our food and our water will change behavior. And I know that that's kind of optimistic and maybe even naive to think that education changes behavior, but I feel like that is the first step. That's the first thing that we can do and reduce the amount of waste that you create. It's another thing.
Okay, here's another myth. Don't go swimming or surfing after a big storm.
Well, here's the thing. After a big storm, I mean, you're going to get some waves, and that's why a lot of people want to surf. But there's a lot of rip currents too, and a lot of the waves are volatile or really big. So it is more dangerous during that time.
But like, what about the runoff from like all the toxic, like basically you're cleaning out all the streets, all the gutters, all that rainwater goes into the storm drains and then ends up in the ocean.
So I was thinking more about the physics, but yeah, the chemistry as well. Yeah. So you're exactly right. You know, that flesh eating bacteria.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it really likes lower salinity water. So when you have a big storm and a lot of fresh water is coming into those coastal waters, it decreases the salinity, and Vibrio vulnificus grows like crazy. We have, after every single hurricane, we have not only, you know, more cases of flesh-eating bacteria, but also more deaths because people are in the water. They're, you know, trying to clean things up. They get they have a cut that within 72 hours, you can be dead.
Whoa.
I can tell you anecdotally from the surfers out at the beaches near me, because we don't have that nice warm water. We've got like the grizzled surfers that are going to go out there no matter what. And they used to have a name for the rash that they would get after storms on their skin, and they would call it lerpies. And it was just a nickname that they gave it. But you'd get like a weird kind of rash on your skin that would take a while to get rid of. I mean, it's me personally, getting a rash from water means I'm not going to go swimming, but they're like so hardcore. They're still going out because the waves are big, but they're going to come in with flesh eating. What? That's insane. No, veto.
Yeah. Here's the thing. I want to love someone, something so much. Like I wish, you know, like
I love something so much
that you're willing to,
I die for, like, I get disgusting rashes, Vibrio, like, I want to love something that much that I still do it, you know?
Well, doctor, you might not have ever made it as a Mythbusters, but you are officially a Mythbit now.
Thank you for being on our podcast. Embedded in, I mean, you're friends with everybody who's been on this podcast, first of all, and you're a dear friend of mine. So thank you so much for coming to be a part of the Mythbit community. And yeah. I hope everybody follows you. Where can they find you? I know you're Inspector Planet on Instagram. Where else can they find you?
Everywhere. It's Inspector Planet. Every single platform, I have something up there.
Including a comic book for children on, I believe it's with Tamara Robertson, also from The Search. The two of you do a cute, really cute comic book.
Seekers of Science comic book. It follows, like, it's a real world problems, and except like in the comic, you could actually solve a problem in 26 pages, which is what I love about it. But there's a real expert in every, featured in every comic. There's real people that are featured as a citizen scientist, and there's a hands-on experiment at the end for people to do with their kids or for the kids to do by themselves.
Oh, so that's cool.
Yeah. So check out, it's given like a million copies away for free worldwide. Yeah. It's definitely a lot of fun.
Well, it was so nice to meet you. Thank you for coming on. Carrie, your face is glowing. What are you doing different?
I have a friend who gave me a whole tutorial in how to do Korean skincare, and it had 12 steps to it. But we just got a new sponsor, GU, which is Korean skincare, but it's only 2 steps. Like,
oh, whew.
Yeah, I feel like this is one.
Thank God.
They gave me 90 days because they say it takes 90 days for your skin to change. So watch me over the next couple months and tell me if I look younger.
We're going to be documenting Carrie's face. This
We're
going to
document your face, too.
Oh, I'm getting a kit, too?
Yeah.
Oh.
Skincare is not just for women. It's definitely for men, too. You're getting a package.
All right.
GU is a Korean skincare brand that's starting to build a total cult following because people are saying that they're seeing real results.
GU takes some of the most sought-after innovations in Korean skincare and turns them into something incredibly simple.
It's designed to help you improve the appearance of dark spots, acne scars, uneven skin tone, discoloration, fine lines, wrinkles, and rough texture. Basically all the things.
Easy to use, no 10-step routine. Refreshing and rested-looking results.
For a limited time, GU is having a crazy deal for our listeners.
Their Glow Up bundle is already up to 45% off right now, but our listeners can now get an additional 20% off plus free shipping with our code MYTHFITS at JIYUSKIN.com.
That's JIYUSKIN.com. Use code MYTHFITS for an additional 20% off. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about it. Tell them we sent you.
Third Love makes bras that actually fit, so they know this. If your bra feels uncomfortable, the problem isn't your body, it's your bra. Third Love designs for comfort first. Soft fabrics, support that doesn't dig, pinch, or slip. Bras that feel good and look good under everything you wear. Shop Third Love and explore over 60 sizes, including AA through H, and half cup sizes you won't find anywhere else. Get $15 off your first purchase at thirdlove.com with code PODCAST15.
Normally in these ads, you'd expect someone like me to ask you to buy something. But I want to ask you to do something different. I'm Dave Farenthold, and I'm a reporter for the New York Times. I'm an investigative reporter, which means that I follow the money, inside of government and outside of government. The point of my job is to find things people are trying to hide. It involves talking to lots of people. It involves looking through lots and lots of documents. And if there weren't folks like me to go beyond the surface to understand who is really shaping what the government does, the public would be left in the dark about what the government's doing with your tax money, what the government's doing to you through regulations and spending. If you're like me and you think this kind of journalism is important, seek out a news source that does firsthand, fact-based reporting. If that's the New York Times, thank you. If that's your local paper, that's great too, because where you get your information matters.
Welcome back, MythFits. Carrie, Dr. Tracy is hilarious.
I know. We've been friends for a while. I love that girl. She's so smart, and she's fun to have drunken conversations with after we leave STEM Festival. She's the one that goes out with me.
Let's drink to that. Yeah, that was awesome. There was a lot. There were so many more questions I had for her, but we just kind of ran out of time. Maybe we can get her back on.
She uses such big words that I feel like the whole time I'm like down here trying to look them up.
did it break your brain a little bit? You were
broke my brain.
What?
Just a little bit.
What is that word? But just gosh, that's crazy what we're discovering in the ocean.
So Tori, I was just kind of looking through YouTube comments and DMs and that kind of thing. And one of the MythFit fans sent a clip over YouTube to us that I feel like it was so MythBustery that I saved it so that you could watch it. Do you remember when we did cell phone in the gas station, where the idea was that a spark from the cell phone is going to blow up the gas station? If we were going to do this myth today, it would be based off of this clip. I want to roll it for you and so you can see what he thinks.
Oh, dude, he's tasing him. Tased.
Yeah.
Fire. Fire at the gas station.
I know.
Dude, it's hot.
Oh,
it's on fire. You guys need to move back.
So basically, the the cop is tasing a guy, filling up his truck with gasoline.
Yeah.
And the spark from the taser sets the gas on fire. How dumb is it? It's like...
It's Darwin Awards. It's so Mythbusters.
It's
I looked
so
it up.
It's so Mythbusters.
A
oh,
man
my God.
Suffered burns after a U.S. Fish and Wild Game Service officer deployed a taser that allegedly sparked a fire at a gas station in Fort Mojave Indian Reservation. And according to the man, the confrontation occurred after a friend had already left a nearby wildlife refuge where they had been told that they could not fish. So,
and they got tased for fishing illegally? Like... Where's the threat?
I know.
Where's the immediate threat? That's crazy. So that really happened. That's not AI.
I know, but because we're in the era of AI and we never trust anything, this would have been a great Mythbusters. You and I could have gotten tasers. We could have shot them into just gas.
Each
other. We could have blown up a gas station. We could have had fire. Hilarity ensues. Luckily, nobody died, but oh my God, he set the gasoline on fire with a taser.
First of all, why are you tasing this guy for a misdemeanor? And then he burns him up. I love the dude's reaction. He's just like, you dick, you just caught me. You just set me on fire.
You dick. Oh,
damn. That's a good one. That's a great one, Carrie.
I loved the beginning. The first comment was just like, what in the Barney Fife? I'm like, oh my.
Oh, it's so bad. Oh, that is gnarly. Oh my God.
So thank you to the MythFit that sent that in.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that one.
Because that was a perfect, what myths would Mythbusters do today? That one right there. Taser at a gas station as a supersize from cell phone at the gas station. So guys, please keep sending in your suggestions. Who else you might want to see on the MythFits podcast? Because Dr. Tracy Fenaro was fun. I love having these kind of experts on. And I read your comments. I'm reading all your YouTube comments.
And if you get anything out of these podcasts, please like and subscribe and share. It really helps us.
Support us, MythFits. Stay weird. Stay strange.
Pioneer.